I'm John Rothman.
And I'm Mitch Tuckman.
And you are listening to the Retire With More show. I want to remind you that to contact us directly, all you have to do is go to RebalanceIRA.com, or if you prefer, you can pick up the phone and call 877-IRA-4-IRA. We want to tell you that because as Paul is leading us through his analysis, we wanted to give you the opportunity to check with us. Remember, that consultation is free. We welcome your calls and your emails. But now, let's pick up where we left off, because, Paul, I can't wait to hear about those sweaty palms.
Well, we need a better setup.
It causes me more stress.
No. When we were last talking right before the break, Paul, you're all hooked up with transducers. They're measuring your sweaty palms, your heart rate, everything. They're asking you a lot about money. And you asked them, well, how did I do in answering the questions? And they said, we didn't care about the questions.
Man, I feel bad for your listener who's just kind of come on here with me talking about sweaty palms and my racing heart rate. But
well, this is a financial show, everyone, so don't be surprised.
So as I was saying, yeah, I was at a Kansas State at their financial therapy clinic, and they'd hook me up to all of these ways to measure how my body was reacting to the questions I was being asked. And as I said, I was trying to answer these questions really honestly, really think about them. And, you know, they weren't terribly hard questions. They're the type of questions any financial advisor would ask, you know, his or her client. And I thought, you know, I'd aced this test. And I turned to the woman who'd been, you know, watching me, and I said, you know, how'd I do? And she said, well, how do you feel? And I said, well, you know, I'm a little cold, but other than that, I think it did great. And she said, you had one of the highest stress levels of anybody we've ever tested. And I said, what are you talking about? How is this possible? I knew all, you know, the answers. And she says, no, you were focused on the answers, but your body was responding in a different way. It was a classic fight or flight response. My fingertips were so cold because all the blood was going to my core to keep the vital organs going. My palms were sweaty because I was nervous. All of these, you know, and she's fascinated by this. Well, I'm horrified by this. You know, this is one of those big hurdles that every advisor needs to get over, because talking about money, even if you think you know all the answers, even if you think you're financially secure, is difficult because it's so personal. And as I say in the book, you know, these days we can talk about the most horrible disease we have or somebody else has and not worry about it. You know, we can talk about sex with friends, acquaintances, you know, and not worry about it. But we cannot talk about money openly. I mean, have you ever gone to any of your friends or neighbors and said, hey, how much you make, you know, how much you make a year? Hey, how much you have saved in your 401k, or how much did you put in that 529 for your kids' college fund? We would never ever do that. It's taboo. But there are so many other things that are, you know, important and essential to our lives, just as money is, that we're, you know, willing to talk very openly about.
Why? Why is that? Why are people reluctant to talk about money?
Because money is no longer what it should be. Money is a means of exchange. If you have more money, you can buy more things. If you have less money, you can't buy as many things. It's that simple. You know, as this trip out to Kansas State and a lot of the other research in my book showed, money has become attached with all of these psychological values. You know, money is equal to your self-worth, or, you know, the classic, you know, keeping up with the Joneses, or you want money to stand in for something it can never stand in for. You know, love. You want to show more love. You want to make up for love you didn't receive. I mean, money is, you know, a means of exchange. And, you know, money can buy you freedom. If you have a bit more money, you can, you know, get away, take a nice vacation. I mean, that, you know, money, you know, I don't necessarily subscribe to money doesn't buy you happiness. Money can buy you escapes. But when money becomes more than just the ability to buy things you need or buy things you want, that's when it becomes very difficult for people. And that's when people, you know, clam up and they don't want to share how much they have or how little they have, because they don't want to be judged, or they don't want to seem like they're prying if they're the person with more money asking the person with less.
And yet in my business at Rebalance IRA as a financial advisor, usually when we begin a conversation with a client, it's because something got triggered. Maybe they're out of a job and they're between jobs, and now they got to deal with their money. And that's always hard, but usually it's forced by something that happens in your life. They also say when people turn, you know, 39, 49, 59, you know, right before turning a decade. That's a trigger. But these triggers happen, and then they call us up, and they, when they find somebody who wants to talk about their money, who's sort of a, well, in our case, an advisor, and they get to open up about it, oh, my God. I mean, you can't stop them. It's like a relief for so many people to lay it out and get an opinion because they can't do it socially or in other environments. So it's very interesting from our standpoint how this all works. Sure, socially, no one will talk about it. But on the other side of this, people are desperate to talk about it. We're finding it at Rebalance.
I'm curious about tips you got from those who spend a lot of money but aren't broke. How do you do that? I really want the answer to that one, Paul, before I send you my bills.
This is a fun chapter I have. And, you know, I start off the chapter with a football player, a guy named Paul Posluszki, who's a linebacker. He's a really great linebacker. And, you know, I started off with him because, man, football players, they get beaten up all the time for the bad choices they make with money. And, you know, Posluszki is different. You know, by the end of his playing days, if he doesn't get another contract, you know, after taxes, after his agent fees, he's still going to be worth about $20 million. That's how much he'll get, you know, after tax, after agent fees. But when I met him, we were talking about cars. And he was, you know, he was wrestling. He'd been wrestling over, you know, he was getting a free car when he played for Buffalo because the Buffalo Bills, because he signed some autographs. But he really wanted to buy a BMW. And this is a kid who grew up very modestly, you know, mom a teacher, dad a mechanic. And he really wanted a BMW. Well, I talked to him a couple years after that when he got a second contract that really put him in this, you know, tens of million dollar range. And he said, you know, I remember we were talking about the cars. And I said, yeah, Paul, I remember that. And he said, well, I couldn't do it. And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, I couldn't buy the BMW. You know, the headline number in this guy's contract is $47 million. This is, you know, the headline number. I mean, football players, those headline numbers don't matter. It's the guaranteed part that matters. But I said, Paul, why couldn't you buy the BMW? And he said, well, I drove it, and it was great, but it just was too much money. I just couldn't pull the trigger. He's talking about, you know, a $90,000 7 Series BMW. And I said, well, so what'd you do? And he said, well, I bought an Audi. And, you know, it's still comfortable. It still has good German engineering, and it just felt better. Well,
so an Audi,
basement car. Yeah,
there isn't that much difference. There isn't that much difference between an Audi and a BMW.
Well, 90,000 to 75,000. You know, it's 15 grand. But you know, in percentage terms, what's that? You know, 18-19% less.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's those little decisions, those little choices that people make throughout the course of their life that make a difference. If you could save 18% every time you made a decision and take that 18% and save it for something you might need, either, you know, for a goal, it adds up. And a guy like that is going to be okay because he has the ability to make those little decisions now and wait and see how they add up later on. And he's not depriving himself either.
It's almost like an instinctive ability to stay on the other side of the line that you've described, this imaginary thin green line. It's almost like when you get too close to it, you know, and you want to get away from it to stay on the upper part of it instead of cross through it. It's almost instinctive for certain people, or is it learned?
I believe it's learned, and I believe that some of Posluszki is an interesting case because, you know, mom a teacher, dad a mechanic, you know, he told me stories about, you know, they talked about money at the dinner table. They had to make decisions. They were, you know, solidly middle-class people growing up in central Pennsylvania, but, you know, their decisions counted. If they needed a new car, maybe it was a new Chevy, a new Ford, maybe it was a new Toyota, it was a need. You know, the old car was not working anymore, and they had to think, okay, if we buy this car, you know, what else are we going to have to give up? And that's one of the things that people miss. I mean, the kids, the people I've known over the years who are the best with money, who are the best adjusted, particularly at an early age, not, you know, the client that's coming in at 39, 49, 59 saying, you know, help me now. Those people who are best adjusted and have a best relationship to money in their 20s are people whose parents talked openly about the decisions they were making, whether they had a lot of money or a little money. And they were connecting, you know, their labor to what that labor created, which is money, the money that allowed them to make those decisions. And that is essential. I mean, I think the people who try to, you know, hide money from their kids or pretend their kids will never figure out how much money they're worth when they can go on Zillow and figure out exactly how much the house costs, they're deluding themselves.
And that's such an interesting dynamic here in the Bay Area. And you mentioned the founder of eBay in the book, but people here in the Bay Area oftentimes find themselves with these huge windfalls. And I've lived in the Valley for 35 years, and I've just watched people come into lots of money, blow lots of money, and others just hold on to it and save it and grow it. And it's just a very interesting dynamic about getting experience with having money.
And isn't the key here, because we are talking about retiring with more, that you really want to give thought at a younger age to what you're going to need when you get older? Is that a fair statement?
Sure. Not even when you're 20 looking at, 70, when you're 20 and looking at 40 and you want to have a home and you want to have a couple kids and you want to take a vacation, that's a mental leap. That's a big place to go from your first job to having a family.
If you want to retire with more, and we have to break in another minute or so on this segment, but if you want to retire with more, what's your best advice for the people listening to our program?
I think it's, practicing moderation with occasional moments of indulgence. Because if we tell people, you need to save X amount every week and do that, boom, 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 don't have your Starbucks, don't treat yourself, it's going to be very difficult. If people have some sort of goal in mind, they want to have, Y by this time, by the end of the year, they want to have Y more. Well, that gives them some sort of flexibility. They can, practice moderation and have occasional bits of indulgence. They can have that nice bottle of wine at dinner. They can go out, with their friends. They can go on a vacation. I think that's a more realistic way for people to think about, spending and saving their money.
Okay, speaking of indulgence, you have a story in your book about the son of Ruth Chris's Steakhouse. And that is an indulgence. If my wife is listening, it's one of her favorite restaurants. So when we come back, we are going to ask you to tell us that story and a little bit more right here on the Retire With More program. I'm John Rothman.
And I'm Mitch Tuckman.
And our guest is Paul Sullivan. And we will be right back.